All right. There are two times every year where I let Merrick get his junior hockey boner up. One is the NHL draft.
Well, hang on.
The second is, of course, World Junior Championships. As we do the show today, we're hours away from the gold medal game, so yeah. We can't really talk about that too much, other than maybe like place a friendly wager. I'll take Canada. But Merrick, what has impressed you, surprised you, what have you, about the Final Four, the semifinals, and how this thing has shaken out in the World Juniors?
Well, once again, my prediction fails me. Because for whatever reason, in any of these tournaments, whether it's this one, the U18, the Ivan Hlinka, anything, my default is always, even World Cup of Hockey, my default is always, Swedes are going to win. I always take the Swedes in everything, every single time. And I'm going to have to learn how to stop. Because as much as the Swedish program makes elite level players, you know, I've been sort of hesitant to come to this conclusion, and I'm still not there yet. I just don't know that they make great teams. Mm-hmm. And again, it's a one and done, and it could have gone either way last night, I suppose, although when Canada put its foot on the pedal, that was it for Sweden. They make such high-end players. I mean, their premium is skill development. Develop those players. And where the skill development for countries like, you know, Canada is, you know, still high, the premium is still on make a team, make a team, make a team. That's still, you know, in a lot of ways, the way that, you know, Hockey Canada thinks. So maybe it shouldn't come as a surprise what happened yesterday. But, I mean, there's a lot of individual things that I've seen in the tournament that have turned everyone's heads. No one's laughing at me anymore for putting Nico Hischier third overall for the prospects in my December ranking. So I'm happy about that. Now the secret is out about how good this young Swiss player is. He'll be the highest drafted Swiss player ever come June in Chicago. Rasmus Dahlin, I think, has been a nice story for a lot of people as we get ahead of ourselves and look at the 2018 draft. You know, there's going to be some really good players in that, whether it's him, whether it's Sechnikov, whether it's Merkley, whether it's Bodie Wild, whether it's McLeod, go right down the list. But there's been some good individual performances. But to me, and by the time you listen to this, we already know what the outcome is, I'm sure. This is the dream final. Like, this is, with all due respect to the Europeans, this is the dream final for a quote-unquote capital H hockey, don't you think? Like, these are the two juggernauts that right now we always want to see face each other. It is Canada versus the United States. And I say this every time these two teams meet, for the good of the game, USA's got to win.
I wouldn't mind it. I'll say the same thing I always say about this game. When these two teams play and it's an elimination game, we don't care. So it's the best position to be in is to be an American fan where if we lose this youth tournament, who cares? Yeah. If we win, it is the greatest win of all time. We obviously come in as heavy underdogs. And the best thing ever is like to have no stakes, to lose and feel fine about it, to win and to know that you can hold one over on Canada and send Canada into the usual death spiral of psychological damage of which players in the NHL didn't play. That's why we lost. We have to have a consortium on our goaltending. Oh, it's the best. It's the best feeling ever.
But the thing is, like, now, and, you know, Finland can say this as well, but the USA can also say they've left their best players elsewhere as well.
Whether it's true.
Matthews or Jaika, Warren, Zach Werenski. Like, I'm sorry, but this isn't exclusive domain over Canada anymore. Because the best players available for USA were not available for USA. Mm-hmm. They're playing in the NHL, which is a great thing for the game. Like, it's a great thing. Like, does it take some of the luster off the U20? Obviously. How great of a tournament would this have been had Connor McDavid, you know, been available for it? Had Austin Matthews, had Patrick Laine still available and playing? Like, the entire Finnish first line, right? Laine, Sebastian Aho, Jesse Puljujärvi. If that line, like, we wouldn't be talking about, you know, relegation games for Finland.
No.
If that line had still been playing. So is it still best on best? Well, no, because the best are playing in the NHL. Still a hell of a tournament. Still a lot of fun. Still, you know, the ultimate pressure cooker for a lot of these kids. But I think we're past the point now of saying that this is a best on best tournament, because it's not. Because the premium on youth in the NHL means the best players right now are in the NHL. They're now playing at the U20. Still a fun tournament, but let's not call it best on best anymore.
Yeah. Before we get to the U.S. And the shootout win over Russia, let's talk about Russia for a second.
Sure.
It occurs to me that Braden Holtby is 27 years old, and he signed through 2020, and he's a very beloved player for the Washington Capitals. But there's a very good chance at the end of his contract, Ilya Samsonov will be the goaltender for the Washington Capitals.
But won't we be saying the same thing when it was Neuwirth and Varlamov in Washington? Like, by the end of all of this, it's going to be Braden Holtby. He's the last man standing.
Could be. But Samsonov is really good.
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, he's legit. He's been fantastic. He's going to be, you know, hella good for a lot of years with Washington. I'm not sure how many more. Do you know how many more years he has on his KHL deal? Like, is it one or is it two? I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either, to be honest with you.
Yeah, because I think Kaprizov still has two, so Meany's got to wait a little while for him. But I'm not sure if Samsonov is 1 year or 2 years, but listen, dude, that guy's good. Like, here's the thing about Russian netminding, and this is, you know, maybe a lesson for Canada, that, you know, the Russian netminding success, because now every year we're seeing more elite-level goaltenders, you know, come out of the Russian system. And as has been told to me, a lot of that is because, you know, the people that, you know, developed the Finnish system, you know, they took those practices and literally they took those people to Russia to install those systems of goaltending. Mm-hmm. And it's a very top-down system where everybody gets the information. Everybody learns from the same base. That's not necessarily true in Canada, where there's these little mafia fiefdoms of goaltending camps and goaltending schools where everybody, you know, hoards their little secrets. There's still not that top-down level of goaltending instruction that you had in Finland, still have in Finland, and now you have in Russia. This
right.
is one of the lessons of international hockey, and no surprise why, you know, consistently now Russia's sending some elite-level goaltenders, and now they're not going to see it. Like, now this is a bonus for the USHL, you know, with that import ban on goaltenders in the Junior League in Canada. So now the USHL, and the guy in Green Bay is real nice, all of a sudden now the USHL is now the benefactor of that.
Yeah, and it just goes to show you that, like, the only way that we're ever going to get everybody's game raised around the country is to spread the gospel. You have to be missionaries. We need a Book of Mormon like spread of the gospel to the rest of the country, especially in women's hockey. I mean, that we've been saying that for like several Olympiads now. The idea that we need to go out and bring our talent other places and train their talent and everything else. And now, I mean, as Hillary Knight said recently, if these two women's leagues can never get their act together and become a single entity, that would also help to get international players to come here more often and learn a thing or two over here.
Doesn't that have to happen?
I mean, it has to happen.
The same way that I looked at SiriusXM, you know, two great ideas, the same idea. Why are they separate? You know, the marketplace really can't sustain two. Don't they need to be one? That's
right.
Kind of how I look at the two women. I know this may, listen, Jen Neal is much more of an authority to talk about this than me. I get that. But just on an outsider's viewpoint, doesn't this kind of have to happen for, we keep hearing things like good of the game. Doesn't it have to happen for good of the game?
It does, but you're talking about two warring ideologies as far as player compensation, and you're talking about a metric ton of ego on both sides of the ledger, to the point where the women's game at the Winter Classic, where Dena Lang unfortunately was injured, didn't come together until about maybe less than 48 hours beforehand. They didn't even know they were going to play because of how difficult it was getting them to the table, and also figuring out the insurance aspect of it too. So anyways, here's the interesting thing about that shootout against Russia for the U.S. I felt first couple of attempts they tried to get Samsonov moving a little bit. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then they scored five hole, and it was like
all of a sudden this
revelation of like, oh my God, wait, we could score there. And then they went there every other time.
You know what I loved about it? Listen, man. And of course everybody made, and I was one of them as well. You know, everybody made the TJ Oshie reference with Troy Terry. You know what the ballsiest thing to me about Troy Terry's shootouts were?
What's that?
He took three different ways to make the same shot.
Right.
That's balls. Like, they're all going in the same spot, and he's going to do them three different ways. I love that.
Including that last shot, which was sort of very loping, almost Forsbergian, in the way he kind of just, like, bought it back through the five hole. That was impressive, man. That was an impressive win for them.
That was great. That was fun. You know, and here's the thing, too. You know, some of the Russians jumping off the bench think it was only three shooters.
Yeah.
Or Kirill Kaprizov on the coin toss wasn't sure what he wanted to do. Or the idea that when you go over there, like, you kind of have, okay, Bragan wants me to do this. This is what I'm going to say if we win the coin toss.
And, hey, in fairness, the referees didn't even know how many shooters there were supposed to be. They were about to, I think, go to extra shooters even before Russia was done, I think it was what the situation was. But
yeah, if you're going to go to Chuckers, I know.
It was fun. A couple of reader mails before you have to run, sir. Michael wants to know.
Yes.
Michael wants to know, is Alex Ovechkin going to hit 50 goals ever again, or is this the start of his decline into a 35-40 goal scorer?
I kind of think he's still got 50 in him, don't you?
I do too.
I don't know. Listen, I'm not prepared to, just like last year, I wasn't prepared to write Sidney Crosby off after a bad start. I still expect Ovechkin, you know, to be there amongst the elite goal scorers at the end of the season.
Yeah, there's that thing that we did with him a few years ago too, when he kind of lost his smile a little bit, and everybody was talking about the decline of Ovi. I mean, he's got 18 right now, so you're talking about. I mean, I don't think you're talking 50 this year, but maybe. I don't know. I wouldn't. He's the kind of guy that could put together two good weeks, and all of a sudden he's like three back of Crosby, you know.
Watch him. Like, he'll score five tonight against Columbus. Boom. There you go. Everybody's right, watching. Bang.
Before we get to another listener note, just an update on me and the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Are you guys cool now?
We're getting better. I wrote about him this week. I kind of got into the whole pulling back the curtain and figuring out why it's happening thing. And I think that we've come to a truce where they admit that the power play is unsustainable. I admit that the possession stats have gotten better. We both sort of admit that Tortorella's had a certain level of impact on their success, and we'll see where it goes. I think we've come to a fragile piece, even though calling yourselves the fifth line is balls out stupid.
Yeah, that's a tricky one.
But what do you think about him?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I'm here.
Right. So tell me, we have someone picking up and hanging up the phone here on our line, which is bizarre. Listen, man, to me, I mean, there's always that one team that you say, okay, it's unsustainable, but they do it the entire season, right? Whether it was, you know, the Colorado Avalanche the one year, the Minnesota Wild, Calgary's dined out on that before, the Maple Leafs in the shortened season. So where I'm at with Columbus is, are you, because I watch every Columbus game now. I'm addicted. Like, I can't stop. Well, I am telling you, dude, Columbus is on speed bump. Jeffy's watching it. But if it goes more than 6 minutes and I don't see a power play, like, I get angry. Like, it's like if you go to see your favorite band and they don't play your hit song, the one hit song you came to listen to, you feel ripped off. And that's how I feel about the power play. Like, if I watch Columbus and it goes more than 5 minutes, they don't play their hit song, I get pissed. Like, I just want to watch that power play over and over and over and watch them move the puck over and over again. That's where I'm at with Columbus I hope it continues because it's an awesome story.
It looks great, and it's absolutely insane to me that a team in the NHL is still going at a 28% clip in January on the power play. That's just, you don't see it.
Okay, then how much is Sam Gagner getting paid next year? Because I think his point per dollar is like $25,000, which is the biggest bargain in the NHL this year. He's in it 1 year, $650. It's a show-me year for Sam Gagner. Sure, he's playing fourth line with Sedlak and Hartnell, but on the power play, this guy's making it sing.
Listen, Sam Gagner is a friend of the show, and I'm very happy that he is because I find him to be very interesting and insightful. But is this a corner-turning moment for him, or is this an aberration?
I don't know. He was always someone that, you know, a lot of people said, you know, you got to put this guy on the power play to get the most out of him. Dave Tippett barely gave him, you know, any sort of sniff on his, you know, second unit. Wouldn't even put him out there on the first. With Hackstall in Philadelphia, that wasn't going to happen. He's not getting a scratch. I mean, he got scratched a bunch. He got sent down to the American Hockey League. And this was like that Hail Mary attempt by Gagner, where many people say, like, okay, that's it. He's going to go string it out in Europe. He's like, I'm coming in deep discount to show that I can still play in this league. And as much as this league is, I mean, so much, it's so hard to score 5-on-5. But as much as this league now is turning into, you know, try to dominate on the power play and play 50-50, 5-on-5, isn't a guy like that valuable to just about every team? Like, if you can, look how much of, like, just like the Los Angeles Kings, the Golden overtime. What's the record? Like 7-1 in overtime? Like, picking up points, unlike right. Dallas and Nashville, they're just leaving points on the ice. Like, much like, you know, your OT has become so crucial now, isn't your power play just as crucial, maybe more crucial than ever? considering how hard it is to score 5-on-5. If you have a guy that can make a power play sing, I don't know.
Sure,
man.
No. Well, first of all, I think making your power play sing doesn't necessarily come down to a guy like Sam Gagne. I think it comes down to a guy playing the point and maybe a guy in front. Like, I think a Wayne Simmons is more valuable than Sam Gagne. But the other thing, too, is that you don't want to. If you're singing with your power play, guess what? You're going to run out of voice by the time the playoff gets there because nobody scores in the playoffs on the power play. So if you're a team like, and that, friends, is why the Washington Capitals have never won a Stanley Cup. Real quick, John, speaking of power plays and all this jive, John wants to know, Sidney Crosby is an All-Star Game captain. Will he finally show up and play?
How do you duck out of this one, Sid? I think so. Yep, I think unless there be some mystery injury around All-Star time.
Dude, listen. Here are the conditions you need to know about Sid. Is it a place he wants to play? Sure. Everybody loves L.A.
Yeah.
Is there a reason he wants to go? Absolutely. He's going to be one of the top 100 players of all time when they announce the list. So there's two good reasons for Sid to show up. Oh, and also, he won the damn cup. So he's kind of probably fat and happy right now off that, too. So three things all in Sid's favor, obviously going to be attending the All-Star game as a divisional captain.
Hey, you know what's a really good place for guys that don't end up going to the All-Star game but are superstars? To go and hide out during All-Star. Like, if you're not going to go to, like, Jamaica or you're not going to go down south, this might be, you know what's a really good place? If there's any listeners from there, you know, share some stories. Austin, Texas.
Oh, really?
It's supposed to be, like, a real cool spot where a lot of the guys that don't end up going to this thing, but you can kind of go and hide, and it's a lot of fun. And it's a great spot you don't have to really, you know, leave America to go do it.
I can vouch for Austin being a lot of fun. I did not realize that it was sort of the hidden away station for All-Stars that weren't All-Stars.
I was told that's one of the sneaky spots.
I mean, I don't know what that says about Texas as a hockey market where a bunch of NHL guys can go, like, hide out there in anonymity.
Well, didn't Eric Lindros talk about this before when he was playing, you know, that brief bit with the Dallas Stars? That it was great because, you know, he could be Eric Lindros at the rink, and then the minute he leaves, he's just like, hey, who's that big guy? Does he play football? You blend in Kaiser Sose style.
All right. You got to run real quick. You were much missed at the meetup we had at the
Winter
Classic. It was really cool. Urban Chestnuts, the bar and the brewery that put it together. It was us and St. Louis Game Time that kind of partnered on it. And lots of love for MVSW, a couple of MVSW t-shirts, and much love to you.
That's awesome.
And it was a good time. We had about like 50, 60 people there. I, of course, wore my New Jersey Devil Scott Stevens jersey to a St. Louis event because why not?
Of course. It's so cool. Very nice.
A really great time.
Good job. Hey, you know what? The next one I think where you and I are going to be in the same spot is probably the draft. And that's in Chicago, so you know who we have to get to organize it because Tracy Meyer's going to be way too busy, and I hate handing that to media. But we got to get Allie Bickford
to
organize something. Let's get Allie. Allie's awesome.
Allie will be on the case. And failing Allie, CM Punk, of course, would be second choice.
Yes.
Throw it together. Because he's not busy
Allie
at all.
Bickford or CM Punk. That's our choice. I'm going with Allie in that one.
All right. But prediction for tonight, as people will probably hear this tomorrow morning?
USA wins 3-1. This is my prediction. And Clayton Keller with 2 and Jordan Greenaway with 1.
I'll take Canada 3-2, and I'll take the Capitals 4-3 against CBJ.
For that big one too. Yeah. I think the Capitals end the streak. I'm with you on that one. And Ovechkin scores 5. I'll stick with my earlier prediction.
Yeah, I kind of don't like the matchup of Bob versus Ovi and Kuznetsov. Because you know they just want to be dicks and knock out of the box and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
They just want to finish the Blue Jackets.
You be well, sir. No bets on the game this year, on the World Junior game, because, again, Americans don't care enough to bet. And I don't want it to be a thing where, like, if I lose, I have to give Merrick anything, because, like, I don't really care.
Hey, man, listen, everyone listening, enjoy the game. Be a dick on Twitter if you want. That's all cool. That's part of the fun. and don't take it personally. Look at this tournament the way the rest of the world looks at it. It is a development tournament for hockey players. The final one before they graduate to the pro ranks. And that's all.
But seriously, though, like, if you are going to talk about the game and you are going to troll American fans,
be creative.
Be careful with the Trump stuff. I'm serious. Like, one wayward tweet falls under that man's tiny hands, and it's goodbye, Saskatchewan.
Well, I think, no, Trump's pissed, right? Because the wrong team won the semifinal game.
I had a tweet go viral during the game last night. It actually made National Public Radio, I guess, today. Someone told me.
What was it?
Where I said that the USA coaches surprised Russia by using Terry three times in the shootout, which obviously means they didn't reveal their plans over email.
Very nice.
Exactly. All right, Troy, dude. Be well.
Troy, tear us off. Okay. Enjoy talk the rest of the broadcast. Enjoy the night of hockey. We'll talk, hopefully, ASAP. We should get on the podcast.
Talk to you next week. All right, bye.
See you, bud.
Jeff Merrick. My boy was a little busy this week. I don't know if you know, but he's got a ton of prospect stuff to do. And also, and by that I mean, of course, be with his kid at hockey. No. Part of the expanding life of Jeff Merrick has been doing a bunch of more prospect stuff for Sportsnet. And so he's got his head buried in a bunch of stuff. But luckily we were able to work out a little bit of time on the phone. Chris Johnston from Sportsnet is coming up in a second. Hey, Sammy, do you have an intro cued, by the way? I know today was a very fly by the seat of your pants type day. I don't know if you've got an intro cooked up or not.
Unfortunately, wish I do not.
I didn't think so.
I was just trying to call Chris here. Give me 2 seconds.
I think that was Heartbreaker from the Stones I was just doing. Anyway, CJ's going to join us in a second to talk about stuff. Yeah, thanks to everybody who came out to the meetup in St. Louis. St. Louis was, once again, like, I know what the ratings were for the Winter Classic. I know what the ratings were for the Centennial Classic here in the States. It doesn't matter anymore. Like, if you're in St. Louis for this event, it was party of the century. Everybody had a great time outside of the rain. I love these events, man. Like, the All-Star Game is one level of everybody coming together to celebrate hockey. The Winter Classic, and to a slightly lesser extent, the Stadium Series, has now become not only a celebration of hockey for whatever locale it's being held in, but also a celebration of that franchise. And that's the thing I loved about the St. Louis one. You know, a chance to celebrate the Blues players, a chance to connect the past with the present.
CJ's there, bud.
The whole thing is just beautiful to watch, and that's why I hope they bring it to other places that maybe have a little bit more nostalgia going on than people give it credit for, like Tampa Bay. Chris Johnston joins us. Hello, CJ. Happy New Year, bud.
Happy New Year to you, Wish.
Let's talk. I didn't talk about Austin Matthews at all with Merrick because I figured that you and I would discuss it a little bit. There's been a lot written about Matthews and his rookie season and this goal-scoring pace. First of all, does the goal-scoring pace surprise you? And second of all, what do you think he ends up with?
I would say everything about his start through 37 games surprises me. I mean, obviously, whenever you're drafted number one, and people are talking about this guy for more than a year ahead of his draft year, but I didn't expect him to make this immediate impact. I mean, the Leafs in every way are better when he's on the ice than when he's not. Even Mike Babcock, who was, you know, initially a little bit reticent, I think, to throw him into the deep end, is now literally deploying him the way, you know, Jonathan Toews would be by Joel Quenneville or Sidney Crosby, or, you know, they've already kind of put him in the position we all expect him to get to in time. And so, you know, the fact he scored 20 goals through 37 games, you know, for me, the interesting part is he just generates so many shots. He's not doing it on a crazy shooting percentage. So I think 40 for him is a real number. Obviously, it doesn't give him much wiggle room from his start, but, you know, I believe, based on watching the guy, that's where he's going to get to.
Do you have a feeling that even if Laine ends up with better numbers, that Matthews is going to win the Calder just because he has the bigger moments?
Oh, that's tough to say. I mean, it probably depends a little bit. I mean, if the Leafs get in the playoffs, say, this is an example, and Matthews gets some credit for that, I mean, those types of things will factor in. But I think their numbers will have an impact. I mean, the other thing that Laine is fighting is kind of in general this view that playing center is more difficult than playing the wing as he is. And, you know, even maybe some people might be looking into his line mates because
You know, he's played with some better players this year, I think, than Austin has. But to me, I still think production's important. And if Line A, you know, blows him out of the water, it would be hard to justify voting that way. So, I mean, of all the awards, for me, and, you know, I'm one of the voters like yourself, Craig, I haven't made up my mind, but on this one, it's like, to me, it's a total, I mean, at this point, it's impossible to handicap because I think the next 40 games matter just so much to it.
Well, I mean, the only award I've made up my mind about is obviously Guy Boucher for the Jack Adams. Listen, as you know, I do everything I can to not overpraise the Toronto Maple Leafs. I try to provide as many needles for their balloons as I can. But I have to admit something, and I wanted to get your take as a longtime Torontoan. I see Matthews, Marner, and Nylander in pictures together, and I'm thinking it's like seeing Jeter, Pettit, and Mariano Rivera together in like 1995 in Yankees uniforms. Like, you get the sense that this is the start of something really special up there. And I felt that way in seeing all those pictures of them standing outside of the Centennial Classic. Like, we're going to see these pictures in a photo montage once they win their first cup.
It is starting to feel that way. It's funny, like, even early in the year, I mean, obviously there's lots of excitement about all of them individually and together, but, you know, I wasn't at that level, but it's only here in the last little bit, I think, that everybody's starting to feel that way around Toronto. And, you know, even just anecdotally, some of my friends who haven't watched the Leafs in years are, you know, texting me for every breathless update when they're up playing against the Predators on a Tuesday now. Like these guys have really got the city on notice. And I think to some degree, the league, you know, someone from another team, Greg, the other night when the Leafs were playing Washington, texted me and said, "We better win our cup soon because the Leafs are going to go on a run." And I wrote back, like, "Are you kidding?" And he's like, "No," because, you know, I thought it might be something someone sarcastically was saying from afar. But, you know, I think that there's a grander feeling around the league that the Leafs are going to get it together here, and that they've already started to, obviously, with the results they've had. But, you know, your comparison might not be far off. I mean, I can't predict they're going to win even one cup, let alone multiple cups, but clearly it's the best core this team's had in a long, long time, and they're all basically the same age, you know, ready to be at their best at the same time a few years down the road.
Yeah, and isn't it funny that, like, you know, for years and years we've debated the idea of there being a second team in Toronto, and a lot of that talk, I think, was centered around the fact that so many people were disenchanted with the Leafs and their direction that maybe an alternative would have really sold. But could you imagine being the second team in the market at a time when the Leafs are starting to recapture the imagination of disenfranchised fans? Like, it'd be scary. There'd be empty seats, I think.
Yeah, you'd have to market it totally counterculture and make it cheap and, I don't know, somehow appeal to the hipster fan base or something, because, you know, I'm with you. This thing feels like it's going to be, you know, like the whole city is going to get behind it again. It's been a long time. I was in university year in the Pat Quinn years, and so obviously saw, you know, what it was like when they played, you know, multiple playoff series kind of year after year. And even though they weren't a team that could win, I mean, like, the city stopped when the Leafs were playing. And what has stopped is that whole idea in the last 15 years or so. I mean, it's, you know, it's really changed. And, you know, but now it does feel a bit like a sleeping guy might be awoken, especially with some of the things, you know, that Matthews has done. And, you know, Mitch Marner barely gets talked about, and he's on pace for something like 65 points at this point in his rookie year, and he looks like he could be playing the OHL still just by his body type, and you see his face. He's such a young-looking guy. I mean, it would be very difficult, I think, to come up with a second team at this point, but, you know, there's enough hockey fans around to make it happen, but the timing right now is going to be really bad if these guys are good for 10 to 15 years as a group.
Oh, and don't worry, Marner will be talked about a bunch the first playoff series when he has 5 goals and Matthews only has like 2 points, and then he gets all the love of being a clutch and Matthews gets all the grief. Two other items I wanted to discuss with you while we've got you.
So, well, before we go, though, I actually want to ask you a question.
Yeah, go ahead, bud.
As a proud Team USA guy, I mean, you must be looking at Matthews with an extra level of excitement for what he might do for your country. I mean,
oh, CJ, it has nothing to do with what Austin Matthews might do for my country. It has everything to do with the idea that if the Leafs finally won their first cups in 67, it would be an American hoisting it first. You couldn't do it without the United States, would be my feeling on it. And
well,
it would make me so happy.
How would you feel, though, if he was also doing it while wearing a gold medal that he won over Canada in the final or something in Pyeongchang?
Oh, I think it'd be great because he'll definitely be, in his most productive years for Beijing. Because, you know, as you know, we're
right.
Not going to Pyeongchang. no, I think it's great. And honestly, like, as much crap as I gave USA Hockey for the absolute bottom of the dumpster disaster that was the World Cup, part of the reason was that they had so many great players that were stuck on the Team North America squad. I mean, that's a different team if Matthews and Eichel and them were on that team. But then again, the way they built that stupid team, who even knows if they were going to be on the team with the lack of skill that they decided to build the roster with. So,
who knows? Team Canada left Sidney Crosby off an Olympic team once, and that didn't go well. So it can be done not just in the U.S.
That's true. So the thought, or at least what Bettman said, is that we're going to get three outdoor games next season. You have any inkling on where we might go? Because honestly, I was at the Winter Classic this year. It was the first one I can remember where there wasn't rampant speculation about where the next one was going to be.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like the first two are going to be tied for the Centennial, with one still hoping in Ottawa on the 100th anniversary of the first game ever played, which I believe is December 19th. But don't quote me, somewhere in that range. And Montreal is the other place that's going to get one. So maybe two Canadian outdoor games. And, you know, I saw, you know, there's a report, I think, out of Vegas about West Point maybe being out of the mix. But, you know, that the last I've heard, the West Point would be sort of the Winter Classic game for next season.
That's interesting. Now, you know, I've been making fun of the NHL for calling this the first Centennial Classic, but I'm guessing that might be how they would brand the other two Canadian games, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, that would make sense. I mean, because it was definitely connected to those two events. I mean, the league was founded in Montreal, and they haven't played an outdoor game there. The Habs have been a visiting team in a couple of them, and then in Ottawa is where the first game itself was played. So they might change the wording, but, I mean, it would make sense to make them sort of Centennial Classic type of events.
How did the Centennial Classic play in Canada for Toronto? Was it very just a localized success, or did Canada tune in to watch it?
I haven't actually seen the TV numbers, but my sense is that it was more local than anything. But I mean, it was a hit in Toronto. It got sort of slow buzz at the beginning, and then lots of cynicism, and then by the time the day came, everyone seemed to love it. And you know, the stands were full, and there was sort of tailgating and the whole bit that you get most of these outdoor games, and obviously the game itself delivered, you know, to kind of ensure that anyone who was there is going to remember the fact they were there and want to talk about it years down the road. And then, you know, I think at some level there's a bit of sports fatigue in Toronto. There's been a lot of things that happened here, and you know, some people suggested locally that that's one of the reasons that your tickets didn't get snapped up in 5 seconds flat or whatever it was. But, you know, my sense is that it was first of all, a really great event, and you know, I know the Leafs would gladly take, you know, whatever you're calling the next one, but we'll gladly take something similar down the road to another chance to do it again here.
What do you make of the Blue Jackets? What's your take on what's happening there?
I love it. It's been so much fun, and I've been watching a lot of the games, even when it was going back early in the streak. And you know, it's one of those things that's tough to point to what exactly it is. I mean, you know, having the blue line they have, having the goalie they have, having a power play they have, certainly gives you three really good chances to win every game. But you know, clearly something special has gone on with that team. And you know, I don't really root for teams so much, but I wouldn't mind seeing them tie the record tonight and, you know, take a chance at beating it on the weekend, just because, I mean, what could be more unlikely than that team doing it? I mean, I didn't go back and look at everyone's predictions, but I'd be surprised if there's anyone anywhere outside of Columbus that picked the Blue Jackets to be a playoff team this year, let alone the kind of team that can win this many games and then, you know, really become a national story in the league. I think it's been great. And it just reminds us that when we think we know everything, there's still a surprise somewhere out there for you.
For sure. But, I mean, all the Blue Jackets fans will tell you that they all predicted this before the season.
were you getting some crap from the Blue Jackets fans? Or?
Well, first of all, you know, it's the usual analytics debates that go on where if you looked at the numbers earlier this season, you didn't think there was any way that they were going to sustain it. They had a negative possession percentage as far as Corsi went and everything else. But they got better. They fixed it. And so, you know, when you still had people say, like obviously fans are going to buy into this quicker than the media are. And they did. And then when we were still on the fence about it, they're like, well, you guys are just, you know, idiots and blah, blah, blah. And then the other thing, too, is that they call themselves the fifth line, which I think is patently ridiculous because the fifth line is the line in practice that doesn't play. But, you know, that's a separate issue.
So you're proposing they call themselves the healthy scratches moving forward.
Yeah, that's basically what they call themselves. But I'm just saying it. Like, if you're the Blue Jackets, you got a damn cannon. Call yourselves the Army. Call it anything except for, like, you know, the Black Aces, basically. But
right.
I think we've made. I was telling Merrick before. I think we've made our peace, me and the Blue Jackets fans. I am willing to accept that this team has steadily gotten better, and I've looked into the numbers, and I've looked into why it's happening, and it all sort of makes sense. And I thought Aaron Portsline, if you haven't read it, wrote a very interesting article about the way that Tortorella has coached this team, and the fact that rather than being the taskmaster that he's been in the past with other teams, he's kind of taken his foot off the gas a little bit and said to these guys, look, if you win and you practice hard when we do practice, you're going to get some time off. And I think that's really nice.
Right. And I mean, if we have to remember, he was coming off that World Cup inglorious tournament. I mean, if there's ever a chance to rethink how you do things, obviously with last season in Columbus, you know, although he was brought in the hired gun and then the way things went at the World Cup, I mean, pretty amazing story that they've done this. And you know, I have to say, Columbus, I always have a bit of a soft spot for. It's kind of an under-the-radar NHL city. I remember having a lot of fun there during the All-Star game, and I've been down a few times. And, you know, they actually have a pretty big fan base that I don't think people realize that haven't had a chance to be around. And I guess you're getting the brunt of it right now by pissing them off.
Indeed. Hey, last one for you, bud. Of the teams that are kind of hovering around the bubble or maybe out of the playoffs right now, which one do you think has the best chance of making a little bit of a run to get into a playoff position?
You know, I still see the Panthers doing it, and
wow!
I know a lot of people are down on them, but you know, some of the numbers still for that team look pretty good, and you know, it's pretty tumultuous start to the year. But you know, I think when they, you know, obviously get Barkov back, it's, you know, an injury that's bothering right now. Jonathan Huberdeau is going to play at some point, and I still think the Panthers are going to get things together, you know, and I'm willing to eat my words on this one, but there's just something about that. Their performance looks like they've been a bit unlucky. I know that there's a lot of chaos that's gone on behind the scenes that, you know, will find its water level mark. And, you know, the Atlantic division, all things considered, really isn't that strong of a division, arguably maybe even the weakest, I guess, with the Pacific and the league. And I think there's an opportunity for them to have a good second half, make the playoffs, and maybe even win around this time.
Yeah, and reading between the lines, I'm guessing you think either Ottawa or Boston fall out to allow that to happen, right? You don't see them getting a wild card over the Caps or the Flyers?
Yeah, I think it's going to be very difficult for Ottawa in particular, but I'm not totally bullish on Boston either. I think it's going to be actually probably one of the fun playoff races because I think the Leafs will be part of that mix. Obviously, the Tampa Bay Lightning are still going to have something to say about all this. I mean, there's really five teams that are very closely bunched already, and I think will remain that way as you get closer down the stretch. But you know, I think Florida's one to watch, and I haven't heard many people say anything nice about them. So there you go.
And I guess lastly, speaking of teams that no one says anything nice about, I mean, we're living in a world right now where the Vancouver Canucks are 1 point out of a wild card spot. What do you make of that?
It's a strange universe is what I make of that. I mean, honestly, I still don't see it for them. And, you know, I understand the public perception that they've said about their longer-term views and not wanting to. But it's going to be a very interesting trade deadline if they remain that close to see how they act because, you know, it still doesn't change my view that they need to think a bit bigger picture and not certainly be doing anything for the moment. But, you know, there's also that temptation when you're that close to the playoffs that maybe you'll, you know, you're going to get fans excited. You have an opportunity to make money if you do make the playoffs and get those home dates. So I wouldn't have predicted it, I guess is the best way to put it, but I'm still not buying in yet. I don't believe that's for real. But, you know, the West is not as strong this year. We do know that it's measurably the weaker conference, and there's only 14 teams. So they do have a chance to at least stay in the race. I just don't see them as being a playoff team.
Yeah, and you know, I just put out some new power rankings this week on Yahoo, and like some, I had a Minnesota Wild fan kind of step into me and being like, how could you have the Wild rank behind, you know, these other teams that have less points than them? I'm like, well, because the Western Conference is not the Eastern Conference this year. The East is so much more competitive, where the even the also-rans are all of a sudden getting right back into the swing of things, too. So it's been pretty fun. All right, CJ, you're the man. Thanks for hopping on with us today.
That was good. Did you stay dry in St. Louis? Or?
I didn't, as I was waiting for Nelly. I interviewed Nelly. And
I saw that.
Yeah, it was pretty fun, but like as we were waiting in the rain for him, I was like, I walked over to wait for him, and I'm like, wow, Nelly's got some really good songs. And I'm like, wow, he's got a lot of songs. And then like 20 minutes later, I'm like, Nelly has way too many songs. And so it got to be a little annoying. But, dude, the fact that they were able to get that game in is remarkable. It is borderline miraculous for how damp it was. As they'll tell you, like the only two enemies of the outdoor games are rain and glare. And I thought I didn't think they'd be able to get it in. And then if they didn't get it in, I wasn't sure what they were going to do. But yeah, it worked out really well. And St. Louis put on a good party. It was a good time.
To be honest, I thought you guys would still be there by now just writing daily weather reports about, you know, the rink and when they were going to be able to play it and all the contingencies. But, you know, thankfully you did get home.
But isn't there a part of you that feels kind of like I sympathize with, I talked to a couple of the Blackhawks about this. Like I sympathize with Chicago. That they've done this five times now, and the last two times were against divisional opponents. Then you look at a team like Nashville, and they've not had to do it once. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of feel bad for the Blackhawks that four-point games are being played in these conditions.
It's hard to feel bad for the Blackhawks. I mean, come on. No, I just mean they've had a lot of success.
All right. That's,
we want to build it up like all 82 really matter, but it's not the case when you're that good.
Okay.
I don't know.
That's a fair answer. I'll take that as a fair answer. All right, dude. Thanks for joining us, man.
All right,
I know.
Take care, bud.
All right, CJ. Chris Johnston bringing the reel. It's true. It is hard to feel sorry for the Blackhawks in any way, shape, or form. That said, I kind of do feel bad that, like, game against the Wild, game against the Blues, they got to go through this rigmarole on almost an annual basis. To a man, they all say the same thing, which is that they're honored to have the opportunity to do these things, and they know that it's their success and their prestige as a franchise that allows this to happen. But I do kind of sympathize for the idea that, you know, they got to do this. They got to have the TV cameras following them. They got to do the skates. They do all this stuff, and other teams don't have to necessarily do it. So I do sympathize there. Thanks to Jeffy, and thanks to CJ, and thanks to producer Sam, who hustled all the way down from the Sportsnet 590 studios, what, like afternoon show or whatever?
Yeah, I was doing the walking show, and then I ran over. I literally ran, so there you go.
Well, you're in shape, so again, like the Blackhawks, I have no sympathy for you. But thank you for making this happen.
No problem.
Once again, in true modern-day NVSW fashion, we pick our spots. We make it work. We do what we can to keep this train rolling. And next week, hopefully, me and Jeffy both in front of microphones and not working the phone or anything like that. But anyways, thanks, everybody. Coming up on Puck Daddy is a bunch of World Junior stuff that you should check out. I think the last installment of our NHL fan survey results will be out soon, too. And then keep your eye out for a really amazing project that I'm taking part in. I can't really tell you the details yet, but it'll be out before the centennial stuff's announced. So keep your eyes out for that. And, oh, yeah, by the way, we're definitely having a meetup / party in L.A. It's going to probably be, I'm going to guess it's going to be Saturday night after the skills competition. And I'm guessing that the Royal Half's involved in it from the Kings blog community. Anywho, love you all. If you need us on Twitter, hashtag at NVSW, hit me and Jeffy there. And we'll talk to you next week. Have a great weekend, everybody. Go Team USA and make it the goals. Bye.